To reason with someone is to motivate them to do or accept topics, ideas, and issues through discussion and having conversations.
This podcast is about the relationship with ourselves and the relationship with others, finding our stability and our self-worth, and how do we actually be in healthy relationships. We find this out through connection, compassion, and communication. Reach out, connect with me, like, subscribe, comment. I want to unpack whatever it is that we can to really get to the nitty and gritty of finding out how do we get better in ourselves and how do we get better in our relationships.
Welcome back to the podcast, Reason With Me. Hello, everybody. I'm just going to quickly ask, if you are listening to this, if you do like what you're listening to, please reach out. Please review on Google or Apple or Spotify. Please leave us 5 stars. This helps it reach other people and allow for more connection and more depth within our society and our world. Hope you enjoy this one. Welcome back. This episode is all about conscious relationships. I want to introduce you to Nick Solacek. He's a certified Margot relationship coach. He works with individuals and couples to boost their IQ and success in romantic relationships, with an emphasis on safe conversation techniques, mindfulness, authenticity, and boundary setting. He has coached Hollywood celebrities, government agents, CEOs, high-profile lawyers, therapists, doctors, fresh partners, and lifelong marriages. He's also been privileged to assist 2 leaders in the field and founders of Imago, and authors of the bestseller, Getting to Know the Love You Want, in their online training for couples. Nick reasons with me about the narratives we have about ourselves and our relationships and how to start having authentic, powerful love within conscious partnerships. This is a really special one for me. We get a bit deep, we share, we get vulnerable, and we start talking about doing this work and the ongoing journey of being and showing up in yourself and in relationships. All right. Welcome back to the podcast. I am sitting with Nick Solacek, which I love saying, which is very cool. Thanks for coming on, Nick. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad we finally were able to kind of figure out the time zones and stuff. Where are you tuning in from today?
Today I'm in Arizona, but I'm based in Vancouver, BC, Canada. Proud Canadian on the West Coast.
Yeah, love that. Love that. Cool. Well, it's cool to get more international guests on the podcast. It feels like I really made it, you know?
Sure. Well, I've spent some time in your neck of the woods, lived in Australia on and off for about 1.5 years, and I'm a big fan. So it's great to be here with you. Great to hear the accent.
Yeah. The Canadians love it. I think the same with us. We love Canada as well. I'd need to get over there, see what all the hype's about. So let's jump in, Nick. Who the hell are you and what do you do?
Good question. Well, I'm a relationship coach trained in something called Imago Couples Therapy. And today we'll probably talk a bit about what that means. But essentially, my work focuses on working with couples to create a heartwarming connection that thrives and try to help couples free themselves of some of the perils and pitfalls of being together. A lot of the couples that I work with are entrepreneurs. They're highly creative, intelligent people, but they run into challenges in relationships because they're hard work. And when we get stressed out, we tend to get short, shitty with each other. We can be stubborn, say things the wrong way, miss things, be totally misattuned, and we need some guidance with that. Mm. All the couples I've met that have thriving relationships that they love have gotten support or had mentorship. And there's a number of reasons why I am where I am, or I decided to work with couples, but it's the most challenging and rewarding career that I've ever had. So I feel very honored and blessed to be doing what I do.
Yeah. Well, that's a hell of an intro and already got lots of sort of light bulbs going for me as to where we can go. And I'm super keen to see what we can cover in the short time that we have together, Nick. So straight off the bat, how and why, you said, best career you've ever had. How did you land here? Like, how did you land wanting to do this relationship deep dive work that is bringing people together and creating unity, I guess.
Yeah. When I was younger, I was really drawn actually towards the dating experience. And as a young person might be trying to work out, how do I meet someone great? How do I, you know, have a partner in my life who I find attractive and is an awesome person and make that whole thing work? Mm. You know, originally where a lot of guys start, which is where I started, is how do you talk to women? How do you approach them? How can you win them over or get a chance at a conversation? Mm. And a lot of guys get pulled into, you know, the pickup arts culture, into psychology, into a lot of different portals that try to answer that question. Mm-hmm. And I explored all of those. And at the time I thought maybe one day I'd be a dating coach, you know, okay. because I started to learn how to talk to people while being connected to myself. Yeah. And have interesting conversations and all the fun things that can happen when you're interacting confidently with others, especially the opposite sex or, you know, maybe the sex that you're attracted to. And I learned a lot from that experience, but inevitably, and I never, followed through. I don't think inevitably is the right word. I just never followed through in that dream. I kind of had some limiting beliefs and ideas that maybe who wants to hear from a 21-year-old kid about dating? You know, I don't really have a lot of life experience. What do I know? Mm. So I pursued other things, other interests, but this interest in working with people, this interest in relationships never left me. Okay. And what I found after over a decade of pursuing other careers was that I was still very interested in it. And I'd been lucky to meet a mentor and some people in the personal development space that led certain experiences for me. That had me see that maybe there's something more here. Maybe there's some talent. There was some purpose that really belonged to me. And it's interesting because now I feel like I'm built for this. You know, yeah. I feel like I'm designed to do couples work. So there's many people I met and things that happened along the way. But essentially, all the other jobs that I tried, I never really loved. I mm-hmm. never really felt like my talents and capacities were being fully utilized. Mm-hmm. And one of my colleagues, Mark Groves, who was previously on this podcast, recommended to me that I check out the work of Harville Hendrix and Helen Hunt, check out this thing called Imago. Mm. And I didn't set out as a relationship coach to work with couples, although I thought it would be possible.
Yep.
As soon as I took that training, I was really, really grabbed by the whole theory and the number of tools and insights that, you know, Harville's laid out in his work. Mm-hmm. And now that's what I'm dedicated to full time, practicing in my own relationship, but also teaching others.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's great that we can utilize some of those tools within our own way and keep building, which I guess helps with that accountability of helping others. So Imago, I've heard about it. I've read about it. I probably do a little bit of it. But how would you, where would you begin with sorting, piecing it together? I know it's a big complex bit of work. But yeah, how's it sort of look, or how is it different to your Gottmans or your other types of, I guess, couples work? And yeah, how do you land on that?
So all the modalities offer something different. With Imago, there's a very comprehensive theory that's been put together, and a main tool, which is called Dialogue. And we find similar methods, similar techniques with other teachers. It's a safe conversation. It's a sending and receiving. It's a technique where one person talks and one person listens. Mm-hmm. And with respect to a lot of the conversations that happen in relationship, especially outside of the honeymoon, outside of the early phases, that kind of stuff is where we go wrong, where we go sideways. My mentor Harville likes to say that talking is the most dangerous thing that couples do. And that's because listening is infrequent. We can talk in monologue. We can talk down to each other. And we're missing a lot. We're misattuned. We feel misunderstood. We don't get each other. And things can start to feel negative. So at a high level, Imago, that world of Imago is filled with a number of different techniques. The main one's called Dialogue. It's a safe conversation format that helps couples make deep contact with each other and find a way to talk about the issues that are most radioactive, that are most challenging to talk about, that are typically loaded with some hurt and some fear, and even historical context around our childhood or our past.
Yeah. I think Mark said something, probably wasn't him quoting, he was quoting someone else, but I will stuff this up as he said he'll stuff it up. But essentially it was that, you know, I think a very high percentage of the arguments or conflicts that we have aren't about what's going on right now. And in fact, aren't even about the relationship that we particularly might be in at that time. And the fact that they are more about what's been going on in the past and what we then bring in to, so that still shows up, I guess. Did you find that sort of to be true in the work that you kind of do in dialogue?
I like to say, I like to say that we're never fighting about what we think we're fighting about, and that there's some historical context driving our reactivity today. And the work of many, many people over the years points to this, that, you know, our childhood sets us up, gives us a certain hand of cards, so to speak, that we're dealt, and we're impacted in certain ways. We develop certain insecurities, certain fears, and later in life, things that are unresolved, hurts from the past that are unexamined, there's a part of our psyche that's trying to work that out or resolve that in our adult relationships, and we don't realize it. And that's also part of this imago framework. Imago is Latin for image, and in the context of this work, the image is referring to an image that I've got, that you've got, we've all got in our mind, which is a composite image of our parents, their strengths and weaknesses, the things that we loved about them and the things that we hated, the things that really worked for them as people and the things that didn't. And our psyche is actually attracted to this familiar image. For better or worse, we're drawn towards people that match this in some way, one way or another. And it causes hurt, stresses us out, and we struggle to get our needs met and make things work.
And I guess this is why, you know, I don't know how the stats work worldwide, but, you know, 50% of marriages sometimes end in divorce. And it's because of that, right? It's a big part of that is we get to the hurt and we don't know what to do with it. And we figure out how to just be within that familiarity and then not move through it or settle within it. And it creates resentment for those that stay or an eventual end to those that need to go. And then the cycle kind of repeats itself. Unless you come and find Nick and start doing some work.
Wow. Yeah, sure. Well, you know, there's thousands of imago practitioners around the world. I'd love to work with everyone. And I just don't have the capacity as an individual to do it. But the paradigms really offered a lot to me. And regarding the stats about divorce, you know, from country to country, these numbers vary. Over the years in North America, I think that's been between, you know, 45 to 60%, somewhere in there. But it's a big number, you know, half of marriages don't work out, essentially. A lot of people use the word fail. I'm trying to get away from that because I've been in many relationships over the last 20 years. And I'm currently with a partner who I've been with for 5 years. And the work of imago and other tools and things we've integrated have allowed us to take on a new perspective and a new attitude and a new philosophy about being together. You know, it's really some wisdom that her and I just didn't have before, which has made a big difference. And I think that for some of the statistics here, people who end up maybe as a statistic, if they feel like the relationship failed, that's okay. But the relationships that I've been in throughout my life have taught me something because I've chosen to look at it that way. I've chosen to say, okay, you know, this didn't work out. What is this here to teach me? How could I have done this better? And sometimes it would have been not getting into a relationship in the first place or speaking more about what I need. Communicating with my partner in a more effective way, saying no, setting boundaries. These are all kind of classic things that people are working on in relationships. And we've all got work to do there, no matter what level that we're at. So, you know, half relationships, half of marriages don't work out. It makes sense. As soon as people have a kid, I think the stats are even worse because there's so much stress that's introduced in that first year. And when our stress levels go up, that's when things start to go haywire. And we need some new resources, new tools to work through that stuff.
Mm. So I guess I'm kind of in an early relationship, and I, like you, have had many relationships that, yes, did teach me so much about me, you know, really kind of put a lot of mirrors that I wasn't willing to look at for a long time. And then some that now I really look into seeing what they have taught me. And yeah, I like the reframe of fail because they are what's brought me here. And I guess in where I'm at now, and this is to no offense to my previous relationships necessarily, but it feels so much more healthy than anything I've had previously. And I'm working with a lot of people that are also in that boat. But despite the pain and traumatic experiences and real stuckness that I've had in the past that created some real dysfunction and real problems and real dire straits for myself, this is still, although it may be healthy, the hardest one that I've been in. And I wonder what your views around that is, to kind of, I guess, get the ball rolling. Is it's because I'm asking myself what I need, and I'm talking about my shit as opposed to doing every other resource that I have to avoid or implode that or explode that to kind of make it over.
I was talking with one of my mentors a few years ago about conscious relationship, and he said, you know, as soon as you start actually talking about your feelings and being authentic with one another and having conversations, you know, that's not a recipe for complete peacefulness and calm. You know, yeah. It's messy. It's painful. Mm. It's stressful. We encounter dark aspects of ourselves and our partner. And conscious relationship is meant to embrace some of these moments and the conflict that comes up as opportunities for growth, you know, so we can use this relationship as a personal growth machine that we can heal. We can evolve. We can, you know, dream a bigger dream, use our energy to be creative and contribute to society in a meaningful way. And it's a bit of a myth that if you're a conscious practitioner or you meditate or something that, you know, everything is going to be perfectly, conflict-free or drama-free, and this is not the case. And that power struggle dynamic that we all experience, where there's a difference between us and our partner, a difference of lifestyle, a difference of opinion, a difference of values in some way, you know, it's always, our brain's going to code that as danger. We're going to see it as a threat. Mm. We have a tendency to use negativity to try to get our partner to change so that we don't have to feel anxious. This is the main pattern. And so that's something that we all have an opportunity to work on. But as you go deeper into relationship, as you might be, you start encountering new parts, new layers of the onion. And you got to continue to ask yourself, why am I here? What do we want to create? And, you know, stay in touch with the purpose or the vision for the relationship. Mm. And we need to be mindful to do that. And we need to work together. It's hard to do it on our own.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I really resonate with what you're saying, because I think for me, and I know a lot of people experience this, is it's something that I look at in where I'm at, and I've done so much work on myself and continue to do so. And then that got me to a point of readiness to be able to face the fear or accept that love may lead to pain, and if I'm ready to love again, I've got to be ready to be hurt again, and all this stuff that's brought me to being able to feel really worthy within and able to start that treacherous journey. But then the growth that I didn't expect to happen, that I knew theoretically and teach and preach, but within myself and I know for others, that then I did a whole bunch of all the other work is starting, you know, and that is a real gift of, on top of so many other gifts in the beautifulness of relationship, no matter it be romantic or not, is that we can keep learning and we can keep evolving within the connection of what that can be within others. And that's been something very profound for me that I think has made an even more bigger dent in what life continues to look like for myself. And I wonder if that is that something that's been like that. You're kind of talking and touching on that before in your journey.
Well, something I'm picking up on in what you're sharing, and I can share more about myself personally, but I just hear the sentiment a lot. I've done the work. I've been meditating, journaling. I've done the meditations. I've done the inner child work. I have my gratitude journal. And, you know, why am I still having these challenges? I took the $10,000 mastermind. I met the partner that I fell in love with. Why are we having such a hard time? I've already healed this stuff. Mm-hmm. And working on things as an individual and working on things in a relationship are very different. There are some things that we can only heal by being together, by being connected, by being close to another. Mm-hmm. There are some things that are only going to be triggered by that. And that intimacy and that closeness in itself triggers our stuff, triggers our trauma.
Yep.
Whether we recognize it or not, maybe we're not aware that we've got something going on. Whether we think of it as trauma or developmental stress or issues from the past, ultimately these are all the same thing. You know, something from our history is impacting the moment.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's another part of that question where you think was about me and my journey. And I agree with what you're saying is that you think something's resolved. You think that, I'll just speak, you know, about myself. I felt at certain times that maybe I'd looked at the father wound, you know, I'd looked at the mother wound. I've explored this stuff and I have more clarity about what my concerns are, or what maybe my developmental issues might be. Mm-hmm. And then you get close to another person and this stuff manifests and comes up in a more real way. And you get connected to the fact that, oh, this isn't done. You know, this isn't totally healed. And I think that there's a kind of a myth out there that we can be 100% completely healed and have no sensitivities or insecurities or wounds or fears. And that's just not the case. I think that we're always going to be working on this and the job will never be done.
Preach. That's exactly right. And always my first alarm bell to go off. I'm like, I'm healed. I've done all the work. I'm like, all right, we'll see. You know, it's forever growing. You know, recovery is called recovery for a reason. It's never recovered. And that's growth too. So yeah, totally. Really, really like that. And I guess in the parts of what you said before, Nick, is that to stay in that is I guess for a lot of people really unfamiliar. And I know you've spoken about this in the past and I really valued that. And I would love to sort of talk about it a little bit more is it's easier to potentially be in potential chaos or potentially harmful or disrespectful or potentially abusive relationships than it is to navigate this stuff within a relationship where someone is willing. I was wondering if you talk a bit more on that idea of everything, because I think it does touch on so many important vessels of this work.
Hmm. We are drawn to the familiar. So if we had a childhood that was chaotic or confusing or abusive, there's a tendency for us to be drawn towards partners who can help us co-create these negative scenes from our childhood. Hmm. And we do it in a few different ways. We can become like our parents. We can project that our partner is like them in some way. Maybe we partner with, pick a partner who we perceive to be like mom or dad. And we really just inspire these moments to play out. And there's a real subtlety here to notice about yourself and what you're bringing to the moment with your partner and what they're bringing and how that stuff interacts. I'll give you a great example.
Yeah.
In the car, my partner and I will sometimes get into conflict with one another. And I'm starting a podcast this year. I'm actually going to do a whole episode on this, like communication in the vehicle, because I noticed that for her, she had difficult moments in the car with her parents that were stressful, that were misattuned. And I noticed that I had those as well. So there's a familiar scene there, being in the car with the family, being in the vehicle with your partner, and things go a little bit sideways. Now, just so happens that the driver is also trying to follow the laws, keep you alive, go in the right direction, navigate any threats or changes on the road. And, you know, for me, I'm like point A to point B. I have a mission here. Keep us safe. Get us there.
Yes,
and my brain and my system is not fully attuned and available to always have deep conversations with my partner. The point is there's something there physiologically that's impacting the moment. You know, our biology can prevent us from being present and curious and available to our partner, but we can fail to communicate that about ourselves or understand that about our partner. So that's just one scene and setting. It could be the dinner table. It could be the bedroom. It could be a Christmas time that we tend to co-create moments that are familiar to the past. And we enjoy the positive ones. You know, we enjoy the loving, peaceful, calm, connected moments. And it's the negative, hurtful, painful stuff that is so upsetting. And it just takes a small little pin prick to emit a very big reaction, just like when you pop a balloon, you know, you get this boom, this big reaction from just a small stimulus. Mm. And so the same thing is true. And when we or our partner are responding or reacting in a way that doesn't make any sense, that's the opportunity to get curious and to ask yourself, what information am I missing about this moment or about this person? Why don't I understand? There must be some information that I'm missing. And in my experience, that information is this historical context. It's something from their childhood, something from the past that I wasn't there for, I don't know about. And now maybe I'm being in a way or talking in a way that is touching that hurt, you know, that's making contact with that. And my partner's reactivity or response or stress around it doesn't make any sense to me. And that kind of interaction causes a lot of trouble, a lot of friction for couples. And even after a few years of practice here with my partner, it's still something that, you know, we work on. We go, oh my gosh, you know, maybe after 10 or 15 minutes, this totally fits this pattern. But that quick turnaround time makes a big difference because it restores empathy for us. And we can sense what each other's feeling and what this is really about. And we can shatter a little bit or dismantle some of the projections that go on and return to, you know, connecting to our adult selves and repairing the moment, apologizing, you know, clarifying what's important to us and where we're coming from. And I got to do my part to listen, you know, to be curious, listen non-judgmentally and making eye contact with my partner, being attuned in the moment.
Yeah.
It's hard to do. We take this stuff personally. We get defensive. We want to react. We want to prove our case, which is often, you know, my go-to, some logical person. So I want to say, well, you know, this. Well, what about that? And none of that really helps create repair or reconnection.
Totally. But it's so ingrained, again, from, you know, experiences that was needed, and that was much more of a survival necessity than it is now, but we get stuck, right? So that all sounds so conscious and wonderful and beautiful, even though it still comes with its ruptures and repairs. But the key part is that you can consciously come back to repair, and there's a lot of awareness and I guess time spent in practice to be able to do that. So for someone who, or couples that are much newer, I guess, to that space, what kind of starts the consciousness? Like, how do we start to helping or assisting or ourselves to be able to go, I need to slow down. Now I've got two part. So I'm going to come back to that next part. But building on this first, I guess, is, yeah, you know, this takes work to get to there. So what do we fundamentally kind of come to? Because there's people that are going to be in relationships right now going, what the fuck do I do? We keep, you know, spiraling, or it's very cyclic. And there's others that are like, I ain't getting in a relationship till I know how to do this. So, yeah, I mean, where do we start the journey to getting more conscious, and creating that ability to start repair work?
It's a big question.
Big answer.
Big question. Yeah. For the couples that are new to personal development or couples therapy, working on things together, the couples that are maybe stuck and things feel really negative, it's not working, it doesn't feel aligned, and they want to make a change. They're growth-minded individuals, but they're in a tough spot. Yeah. The place that I'd recommend everyone start is to share appreciation with each other every day. To say something to your partner, to look them in the eyes and say, honey, something I appreciate about you is, and fill in the blank. Do that for a week. Do that for a month, every day, and notice if it makes a difference. Mm-hmm. If both partners are sharing appreciation, putting positivity into the bank account of their relationship, they're going to notice that they've got more resiliency to handle the upsets and the difficult moments and the challenges. It's when we've got nothing in the reserve. All we've got is resentment and disappointment and hurt. So any little other upset or difficult moment becomes very hard to handle in the face of days and days and weeks and months of negativity and misunderstanding.
Yeah.
So that is the place I'd recommend people start. And it's not hard to say something you appreciate about your partner. You might feel resentful and you might feel like, you know what, screw them. I don't want to. They need to go first. And that's also something that needs to be overcome and worked through, which is your own resistance to actually going first or taking the lead. And, you know, over time, if you want to have a meaningful, thriving partnership, both people are going to need to take opportunities to initiate. And whether that's sex or it's appreciation or it's a difficult conversation, you know, to initiate the conversation that both people, you know, are putting energy in that way. So what I'm talking about here is, you know, based off the work of many people, Gottman developed this 5-to-1 ratio that he observed through the Love Lab, through his experiments, I believe it was just outside of Seattle, Washington. And that 5-to-1 ratio is basically saying that couples, if they're going to have a relationship that stands the test of time that they enjoy, they need a positive to negative ratio of 5-to-1, 5 positive sentiments, 5 positive interactions to every negative moment in order to feel a sense of satisfaction, resiliency. And it's a really big deal. In the work of Imago, we think of it as the space between. Your whole relationship exists in the space between. It's not in you. It's not in your partner. It's in that space between. And everything you say, everything you do, the things you don't do or the things you withhold impacts that space between. So if it's feeling heavy, it's feeling negative, it's full of hurt, how can we transform that? And what couples are usually missing at this stage is a sense of hopefulness that they can actually create change, that they can actually break through or transform their relationship in some way. And that's why I really recommend appreciation and positivity to try to shift that tone into a more hopeful or even neutral position, such that there's a little bit of energy freed up, more spaciousness to talk about positive behavior change, other dreams that you want to come alive, and to have meaningful, productive conversations instead of, as my mentor likes to say, instead of paddling our canoes forward, we hit each other over the head with the paddles. You know, why do we do that? We're no longer on the path. We're no longer, you know, paddling towards a shared vision. We're just attacking each other.
Yeah. I love deposit positivity into the bank account of your relationship. That's amazing and simple, right? That, I guess, leads into my second point in a way, which is nice that it flows. But just on that is that you being able to create that space despite the chaos, despite the ruptures, despite the difficulty, the conflict, the disagreements, is that I still want to show up and love you even though I hate you right now, you know, or that I'm still going to acknowledge you exist. And that 5-to-1 ratio, I mean, amazing, hard to get to for people in the stuckness or in a lot of conflict. So I guess that's my second part that I'd love to break down with you, Nick, is whether in conflict or, you know, still dwelling on something that hasn't been repaired is the ego. So you've kind of touched on it in different ways in the last 10 minutes, which I guess is the ability to come to an apology, the ability to come back to closeness, to reconnect, to soften. What allows a starting point to be able to drop some of that ego?
Yeah, a starting point. There's really a couple key sentiments that you might start with when you're wanting to repair. So if you have a hard time in a moment with your partner of reconnecting, of taking a breath and asking them a question and being curious about, hey, you know, how can we make this better? Or how can we work through this? There's a couple of key things that you might journal on or reflect on in your own mind. One of them is, if I was to redo this moment, if I was to redo the last hour, or I was to redo the moment that started the conflict, is there a way that I maybe could have done better? Is there a way that I actually could have spoke or behaved, something I could have done or not done that would have changed the outcome? And there almost always is, but we can be resistant to actually taking responsibility for that. It can also be just so far outside of our awareness that we don't see it. We've got walls and masks that protect us from that. Sometimes it's hard for me to know or give a general prescription, you know, for everybody. Because everyone's in a different place, you know, everyone's in a different state of mind, a different perspective on these issues. So when it comes to repair, at the end of the day, at the end of the day, whether you're new to this or you're an expert, there are a couple main themes here. And one of them is just about responsibility. Is there a way I could have done this better? Oh, you know what? I wish I could have handled this differently by doing this. And what you really deserve from me in this moment is, you know, these things go beyond saying, okay, honey, I'm sorry, you're right. I'm sorry, you know what? You're right. We actually need to go a little bit deeper to communicate our understanding and our perspective and say, okay, something I would have done differently. What you really deserve from me is, hey, you know, there's something I'd like to repair, something I'd like to take responsibility for. And how I really want our relationship to be, what I'm actually really excited about is this. If you get really reactive, really triggered, then maybe there's something else there. Like, huh, this moment or this pain or this frustration, it really reminds me of this from my childhood. And if people are able to figure that out, if they're able to feel and sense what that might be, just possibly what it might be, they're also that much closer to resolving and reducing the amount of time that they spend inside of these conflicts, because they can more quickly get to the source of what's charging the reactivity. So if you have a lot of conflict in your relationship, you're trying to break through this kind of stuff and you want to make a difference, those are some key sentence stems that I'd recommend. And when I give these to people, it's kind of like a script. And it works if you sincerely answer the prompt. If you start making things up or telling your partner what you think they want to hear, that doesn't work. Your partner's generally going to sense the lack of authenticity or the, you know, insincerity. So I'm not sharing that those sentence stems to give people some script to follow, but these are really points of personal inquiry that I found extremely helpful. And they have allowed me to diffuse the bomb that is certain conflicts in relationship. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that to, you know, paint a picture that my partner is some explosive person, but everybody knows what I mean. These moments that can go sideways in such a hurry, and they do.
Yeah.
They can feel very explosive. It is like kind of a bomb going off. And what would it be like to be able to actually diffuse, to have the skills, the knowledge, and the wisdom to diffuse some of those moments so that they go differently, even mm-hmm. if there is how can we actually find a way to reduce the consequences and minimize the damage to each other?
Beautiful. I'm not sure what just happened, Nick. It sort of shifted you from, it says a change in your devices. It looks like it's still recording, but we'll just carry on. Oh, now it's. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I just lost your audio there for a second. So
now I can hear me a lot.
Now I can hear me a lot.
Okay. How about now?
Yeah. Let me check. Yeah. No, that's much better. Cool. Yeah.
Testing.
Yeah. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Right. Sorry about that.
No, all good. The recording's still going. We're still going. I just got to get back into my zone. My ADHD is going to take me somewhere. And it will throw me back. I really do love that. So let's keep building on that. So look, I really value what you're saying. And I think it is really, really helpful in those sort of stems that you're creating and prompts that you're allowing. A really self-inquiry, I think, in that, yes, we can start to diffuse the implosion or explosion that is conflict, but first is being able to kind of, how do I get to those points? I think those prompts are really powerful ones. I'll give you an example, I guess, of something that I've been reflecting on sharing with a lot of people is the moment where my partner was able to get to a soft place and say, come, we're not going to figure this out tonight. Come closer to me. We'll cuddle and we'll, you know, re-go on this later. And I knew that would be the answer. You know, all of me knew that moving into that would shift where we were at and hopefully then park what was going on and, you know, repair to a point where we could continue the night. But then all of me didn't want to, you know. I think you're kind of mentioning it before, Nick. You're saying, you know, I want to talk through my points. I still got things that are important to say, which was me in that moment. And I guess those prompts that you've suggested and those things that kind of do that are really good inquiries, maybe post-heat, I guess. But in heat, I guess for me was like the ego and the I don't want to come to that point yet. And it was so in my body and in my emotions. And I really found it hard to just pause and reflect because I was, you know, offline really. And to come to a point where I did is to then be cuddled like, in for those not watching the video, I'm like, oh, you know, like, you know, this is helping you, but I don't think it's not softening me. It's like hugging a concrete wall for a little while until eventually I did soften. So I guess there's this part of me that I got to that point and, but I guess I paused and said, I'm finding it really hard to come closer to you right in this moment. And it was almost a monologue to say, I can't drop my shit. So I wondered in those moments where it's like, I can't settle. I can't drop this, but I also know that any more of this is going to keep being too volatile and explosive that we won't repair whatever it is that we're trying to work through. Does that make sense, Nick? You're kind of picking up what I'm putting down with that?
Yeah, it totally does. Not every moment is a moment to have a conversation. So it wouldn't matter, you know, what amazing tool you or me have got and what we might prescribe to a certain situation. It could be a genius tool and a great method, a brilliant sentence stem, and a wonderful self-inquiry. It doesn't mean that every moment is the right moment to work it out or to spend an hour talking about it. And we need to try to develop some consent, you know, about this, which is, hey, is now a good time? Is this the best time? Just because I want to go, just because I want to talk, doesn't mean it is. And one of my mentors calls this psychic potty training, which is that we got to learn how to hold it, even though we want to go, even though, you know, because we can end up making a big stink in the middle of the living room and the company wants to leave, you know, and now the carpet's ruined. So psychically, we've got to learn how to hold on to some of this energy to put it aside for a moment. Sometimes we need to temporarily suspend our reality. And that means that at some point here in the next 24 to 48 hours that you do get a chance to be heard, to share your piece. But hopefully it's not at the peak of a trigger or a really big emotion that you're able to hold on, take a breath, take a moment. There's all kinds of things you could do in that moment of rage or upset or inability to come close. It's just that we're so offline, we just don't remember what our opportunities are. We don't remember some of the tools that we've learned. We don't think, hey, maybe if I just tell my partner, hey, I love you, but I'm feeling upset and I'm just going to go for a walk for 30 minutes to clear my head. And when I come back, I'd love to try to talk about this if it's a good time. Now, if it's 3 in the morning, maybe that doesn't work. But my point is that there's things we can do. We can have a cold shower. We can do push-ups to failure. We can have a meditation. We can do our somatic practice. Whatever tools we've got available to us that help clear ground and reconnect us to ourselves. For some of us, that's very difficult to do. You know, for some of us, it's near impossible.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of another situation in itself. But I definitely understand what you mean about that. And feeling shut down or feeling like you can't or you don't want to. And that's when you're really inside of the trigger or there's another part of you that's online kind of managing or running the show.
Yeah. Yeah. And beautifully put. And, you know, a nice place to end on psychic body training as well. I do like that visual, I guess, you know, just the idea to sit on it, hold it, and assess what is going to help me get to a point where I can at least move, you know, because sometimes there is that complete freeze for some or overreactivity in that I guess heightened state that generally, as we all know, doesn't lead to more success. It leads to more disruption. So I do really value both of those things, and it does resonate with me. And I guess as I hope with people that are listening to me and Nick really get into it, is the reality around, you know, we had a couple male therapists working in relationships that are constantly working on their relationships, and that perfectly imperfect reality is, you know, you might be getting couples work and keep coming to this point where there's more to do or why aren't I getting it? But I mean, it's sort of a bittersweet, but I mean, me and Nick are going to keep doing it. We got to keep working on ourselves to be able to keep doing that sort of thing. And I won't speak for you, Nick, but yeah, I guess I just want to sort of shout that out to others as well.
Well, it's an important message, and I would like to be perfect. I would like for life to be very easy and free from suffering.
Yeah.
And I'd like to everyone to think that I have all the answers and I've got it all together. And I'm not perfect. No one's perfect. No relationship is perfect. And in the online realm of hyper comparison, it can be very difficult to remember that everyone's working on something and everyone's focused on particular outcomes for themselves. We've all got fears and insecurities. And so it's important to have some compassion for ourselves and for others, you know, about the suffering that is part of our life and to try to stick together. You know, we need each other. We're an interdependent species. Mm-hmm. And I hope that this podcast offers some hope, you know, for people that are needing some encouragement, needing, you know, maybe some wisdom just to support them in their current issues and the roadblocks they've got.
Yeah, well said. Well said, Nick. All right, well, I'm going to ask you one more quick question, and then we'll slowly bring it to an end. But what would be you personally, I guess, is ideal, but what would be your go-to resource that helps bring you back in to your body when you're just able to recognize that you're drifting into a place where you're activated or a bit offline or whatever the word might be for anyone listening? What is a way of a resource you have that comes back to you and brings you back into presence?
Personally, for me, I love exercise, whether that's hiking, lifting weights, jogging. That's available to everybody for the most part. There's some physical activity, it's available to them. Whatever, do whatever you can do. I find that's extremely helpful for me. One thing that is available to me that might not be available to everybody is friendship. And I am lucky to have some people in my life that I've met through men's groups, through personal development, through workshops and experiences I've been a part of, that there are people in my phone that I can call. The challenge is, especially for men, is that we don't do it. And we struggle and we suffer alone in isolation, and we don't let anybody know what's really going on for us. And it's been a big growth opportunity for me to remember that, oh, I've got these people that I can call that, you know, can offer a perspective and offer some guidance.
Yeah.
And relate to my experience. So that's something, if you've got it, great. You know, if you don't, put some energy into making some new connections and meet some people that have shared values and are growth minded like you. I haven't always had that in my life. I've always had, you know, friends, right, to a degree, but it's kind of a modern problem that we see friendship rates declining and people identifying with having one or zero or only two friends. It's a big issue in modern times.
Absolutely.
So if you don't have close friendships or people that you can trust, at the very least, you can move your body and be active. It's kind of like an active meditation. Those are two things that have worked really well for me. And blessed to have met some of the people I have that, you know, I could pick up the phone and call.
Yeah, and that's beautiful and really powerful sentiment that I think for me as well, and really even just gives me gratitude, the fact that I do have some of those people, and even that I can have conversations like this that are really deep and meaningful for people across the world as well. So really honored to have the space to do this with you too. So Nick, tell me, where can people find you if they haven't already? And what might be going on for you at the moment?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Nick Solacek or on my website at nicksolacek.com. I run programs for men and women. I have a 4-month program for highly successful couples that want to bring transformation and the work of Imago to life in their relationship and help them create breakthroughs. So people can find me there. I'm starting a podcast this year. By the time this episode comes out, that might be available. So keep a lookout for it.
Yeah, cool. I'll put it all in our show notes, and we'll start tagging on Instagram and get it all out there as well. Honestly, so good. I knew it would be good, and really, really grateful that you've come and taken the time to have a chat with old Jackson on Reason With Me podcast. So yeah, thanks for showing up.
Thanks for the invite, Jackson. It's good to be here. Appreciate you. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thanks, my dude.
Do you want to find out more about how therapy can help you kick some goals? Go check out findreasontherapy.com.au or the Find Reason Therapy Instagram page.